In a significant ruling, the Supreme Court yesterday rejected a challenge to the abortion pill, mifepristone, dealing a blow to anti-abortion advocates. Now, this decision ensures that the commonly used drug will remain widely available, marking a pivotal moment in the ongoing debate over reproductive rights in the United States. And the ruling has sparked some discussions across the nation with implications for future legal battles and legislative efforts surrounding abortion access. Let's continue with those discussions with Jared Halpern. He's Fox News radio correspondent and WJR contributor who joins us on the JR Morning Live line. Jared, good morning.
Good morning to you.
So the courts, the ruling centered on the issue of legal standing. Talk about, why they found that the plaintiffs did not have standing to sue and how this influenced the decision.
Yeah, so it was a 9-0 decision, a unanimous ruling from the Supreme Court, which we don't always think about, especially in kind of these high-profile controversial cases, right? But it is because this was not a ruling on what we would call the merits. It was a ruling, to your point, on more of the procedure on standing. So before the Supreme Court, before justices even consider a case, the first question they have to answer is, are we the proper venue for this? And in this case, Justice Kavanaugh, writing for that unanimous majority, said no, that the federal courts are not the proper venue here. This was a lawsuit that was brought by a group of anti-abortion pro-life physicians. They argued that the FDA's loosening of regulations over mifepristone over the last several years has made it more hazardous to women. They raised some moral concerns with this as well. But what this opinion says is that this group of doctors, this group of challengers, can't prove that they have any personal injury as a result of this ruling. In other words, they are better to voice their concerns to regulators, to Congress, to see if they can change a law, not the U.S. Supreme Court, not the federal judiciary. Now, it does not, as I said, answer some of the broader questions that were raised about the FDA's overall approval and how they've gone about kind of loosening regulations over the years for mifepristone. That issue could return to the Supreme Court. There have been a number of Republican-led states who have also filed a lawsuit against the FDA over this rule. That could reach the Supreme Court. Perhaps the court sees that challenge separately, differently, says that these states do have more of a claim to sue, given maybe what their own state laws are. Recall that, one of the issues that has come up is how far states can now go in restricting abortion access following Roe v. Wade, right? You have states that are kind of all over the map on this, right? Some have enshrined the right to abortion in their constitutions. Others have put forward bans as little as 6 weeks. If you have a medication that can be prescribed beyond 6 weeks, what happens if you live in a state where abortion after 10 weeks or before at the 10-week period is not allowed? Those questions were not answered at all by the court. And so while this certainly leaves mifepristone and access to it in place as it has been for many years for now, it does not necessarily solve some of the larger questions surrounding this drug and how states are aiming to regulate it beyond the federal government.
Jared, this decision overturned the lower federal courts that accepted this theory that, a woman would come in, complications, and present herself to one of these physicians, and then the doctor has this stake. But the Supreme Court said, that's too speculative. We can't rule on a hypothetical.
Yeah, again, it sort of goes to the issue of standing, right? You have to be able to show that you have some sort of, that you have a reason that you're harmed by an action, by a rule, by a law. And if you can't do that, generally a federal court will say that you don't have standing. You don't have the right to sue. You're not, they're not the proper venue. And again, that was the ruling here that was laid down by Justice Kavanaugh, is that while he said that the challengers presented sincere objections, that they need to go to either the regulatory process by appealing directly to the FDA or the executive branch, or appeal to legislators in Congress or appeal to voters to try and get policies changed, but that this is not, from their standpoint, an issue that, that belongs in front of the Supreme Court.
As I was listening to the political reaction, I kind of wanted to say to my friends on the left, hey, can you take the win? It was very interesting to see the reaction, not a lot of celebrating on the reproductive rights side of the equation, in spite of the fact that this guarantees that women will continue to have access.
Well, the way that Democrats have viewed this case and view a lot of these cases is that in the aftermath of Roe v. Wade, there are threats now to abortion access, and that this posed a serious threat to abortion access, and that these types of decisions and this type of uncertainty that this case presented is a direct result of the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade nearly 2 years ago. And so you still see this being a very animating issue, particularly for Democrats now, as a key issue that, that they're going to run on in November. And again, sort of pointing to this case and saying, well, this may have been 9-0, it can return to the Supreme Court. There is still uncertainty. There is uncertainty, they say, because of the Roe v. Wade decision, the Dobbs case. And so it is not something that you're going to see kind of be removed from the debate table here in this election.
They don't want this temporary victory to in any way underscore what they see as a very potent campaign issue.
Well, they also don't see this victory as necessarily taking off any of the threats that they say are still exist for reproductive rights.
Right, because you got three states. You got Idaho, you got Missouri, you got Kansas. They brought their own claims, different arguments for standing.
Right. And like I said, the Supreme Court, the justices could say, listen, these states do have a claim. Mm-hmm. And so we are going to take a look at the merits, and we are going to take a look at how the FDA went about regulating this, because they did not get to that part in the process with this challenge.
Jared, what about the Supreme Court weighing in on the Starbucks fight, the Memphis 7 unionizing effort?
Yeah. You know, this was a case that again, was 9-0. It was pretty narrow in scope, but it also highlights the challenges that kind of exist between the right to unionize, business interests. It was a fairly narrow decision, as I kind of understand it from legal scholars a lot more smarter than me on the law, but one that, you know, has faced some criticism. Bernie Sanders very critical of the decision, right? He is somebody who is aimed to make it much easier to unionize, and has claimed that there needs to be some congressional action here. That was essentially the take of the Supreme Court as well. Again, it's cases in which the Supreme Court is trying to, for lack of a better term, stay in its lane, right? Try and, you know, if there is something to decide from a legal standpoint to do that. But if they believe that this is something that Congress needs to take up or a regulatory agency needs to take up, that seems to be, especially with the Roberts Court, the line that they try and do, right? Trying to narrow as little as possible what the court does in some of these federal regulatory kind of challenges.
Yeah. All right. Fox News Radio correspondent, WJR contributor Jared Halpern, appreciate your time. Have a great weekend.
Sure,
happy Father's Day.
Thank you. You too.
And we have the Idaho decision on abortion yet to come down from the Supreme Court, too.
Absolutely. And the immunity as well, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Coming up, Patrick DeHaan is going to step in. You know, we could be swimming in some excess oil by 28. So let's talk about that with Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy at 835.